Now, a very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. I just heard a news there, just for news, an ad for the Galway Hospice Foundation. And if you want to buy a ticket and win at that Kia Picanto, you can do so. If you give them a ring today, 770-868, that's 091-770-868. And you can buy it over the phone. Just have your laser card or your credit card with you. Laser card, preferably, as I would think. But just give them a ring, 770-868, and get further details from there. Now, to be honest, I was trying to teach myself or educate myself last night when I was reading the brief on our next guest. Our next guest is MEP Maria Walsh, and she has warned of deep fake explicit images and a threat ahead of the upcoming elections. And to be quite honest, she's going to have to start by explaining to me what deep fake images are, and what exactly are they, can I ask you, Maria?
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me on, Keith, and talking about something so serious coming in to local and European elections.
What exactly is deep fake explicit image threat?
Yeah, so for those listening, and there's many, when we think about deep fakes, it could be a fake video, a fake audio message, a fake image that you might see, and you very much see them online. Now, I was telling a team member of mine yesterday when we were talking about this, you have from the humorous to the very serious. So if anybody remembers seeing an image last March of Pope Francis wearing this white puffer jacket and he looked very slick and it went viral and people thought this Pope Francis is super flash. Now, that was a deep fake used in a very satire, humorous way. But most recently, from an election standpoint, an audio message went out to voters that was created by artificial intelligence using President Joe Biden's voice. And that went out to voters sharing misconduct and misinformation. So you have your humorous to your extremes. What an EU Disinfo Lab, which is an organization that researches, works with academics, works with public representatives like myself across the EU, has flagged to me and other particularly female candidates going forward right across the EU, but I think this can be inclusive of all, is that there is a real threat and it's quite scary. And fake images are being created, fake videos are being created to really discredit someone's work, someone's professional life. And I really wanted to put this out to say a couple of different things. One, public awareness is super important, so stay informed and know that deep fakes are out there and how to recognize one, which is very difficult, I must say. I mean, I've seen some when I'm like, God, I think that is real life like. And then verify the sources, always question where this comes from, and then report. Of course, report suspected deep fakes or misinformation. And then from my side and working with the likes of yourself and other people across media, we've an awful lot of work to do with social media companies, legislation, so that we can just eradicate it.
But I mean, that you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, but if you take the likes of TikTok, X, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook and those, I mean, they have a role to play in this and they have to fact check it themselves, surely, before it's put up online and causes the damage that you're outlining to me. I mean, they have a duty of care in traditional media, be it print or broadcast or TV. You couldn't do that and get away with it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's startling just the speed of which this moves and has been moving. From a European standpoint, we have the new Digital Service Act, which was passed last month, which now puts obligations on very large online platforms, all that you mentioned. I know Meta will soon label content that says made with AI, and that's on Facebook and Instagram. But that should potentially help mitigate, but it certainly doesn't remove the speed of which it does. I mean, if something went up with me, Keith, like I have to say, you know, and it was a fake image created showing misconduct, I mean, me going on radio to you, I'm defending my credit, my professionalism, and those who are listening might hear my authenticity in that. But there's a lot of people who perhaps are seeing images and spreading them like wildfire, and that's where the viralness comes from. But we certainly need to do a hell of a lot more work. But public awareness is a good place to start. Work with social media companies, And I, for one, believe if we are using social media companies, it should be, or social media platforms, we should be treated to remove any sort of bots or fake images or hold people accountable who do this, that we should be uploading identification similar to how we do Airbnb or Revolut, that's kept protected and safe, but that we are held accountable to what we're saying and what we're spreading online, particularly in the realm of deepfakes.
But why do you have to defend something if you have no hand, act or part in it? Somebody else did, they created for you, yet they are untouchable.
I know. It's startling. Unfortunately, behind fake accounts, you can get a lot more traction or lack of consequence for your action. Hence the reason why I really do think each account that gets opened up online should be held accountable with an ID, similar, as I mentioned, to Revolut and Airbnb. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of work to do in terms of education, in terms of those social media platforms, as we discussed, from a legislative standpoint. And as an Irish MEP, we've talked about it before, Keith, that we house here in this country several of the social media platform sites. And therefore, we have an extra level of care as Irish MEPs, as Irish representatives, to call this out and making sure our EU legislation, our national legislation flags it. So those listening, just make sure you're checking the content, stay informed. If you think, question sensationalism, if it looks too good to be true, perhaps check where it's coming from. But they're so real, like, you know, they're so, when I seen the one of Pope Francis, I was like, wow, he looks great in that puffer jacket. And it took a couple of hours for me to realize, hang on, actually, I think this might be a fake image. I couldn't imagine if I got that audio message, as I mentioned at the top of this, from President Joe Biden, and his voice is so iconic that you're hearing, oh, wow, this is coming from exactly from the White House, when in actual fact, it's fake.
Until we spoke this morning, I thought that puffer jacket and the Pope was correct, and that it was just, you know, funky and it was modern and the kind of Pope that we think he is. But now you're just burst that bubble on me, so it just proves that.
I'm sorry. I think you could still rock a puffer jacket, Keith. I just want to stress that.
But can I come back though to the core issue on this? Somebody has to take responsibility for this. And again, surely there's technology out there that can determine if we have AI. We should have technology that can identify AI, and automatically, the companies that put it up should be able to reject it.
I agree wholeheartedly. I spoke to a digital content technologist, is how she phrased an analytics, but essentially she did exactly what you just talked about. She pulls down content. There were a couple of weeks ago when I did spoke to her, she was working on the protests in Moscow to try and remove fake content that had been doing the round, very much inciting hatred and more fear and violence, and these fake images doing the round again to really drum that up. And I was asking her that very question, like, why isn't it coming down fast enough? She goes, we have people pulling down content 24 hours a day. The speed of which it's going up in real time, spreading hate, violence, misinformation, disinformation is just wild. Mm-hmm. And she goes, if we're working at it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right across the world, because that's where those touch points are for these social media platforms. She goes, we're paraphrasing here. She's like, we're fighting a losing battle, just the amount that's going up online.
Well, AI has been coming down the line for 25 years, so we shouldn't be so shocked about it. We should be able to deal with it. MEP Marie Walsh, thank you for joining us today. Where can they get further details on this?
Always stay informed. You can go online, even to your social media platforms, and just flag, making sure that your own account it can't be hacked, following the security features set out by Meta and TikTok and X. Keep staying informed. Get in touch with any of your public reps. If you do see something that is questionable, myself included, verify your sources and know that from an EU side, we're working as diligently as we can to ensure that legislation follows suit.
MEP Maria Walsh, thank you so much for joining us today on the programme.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavay Road. A new way to car shop.
Now, very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's programme. We're with you right through until 12 midday. Now, the numbers presenting at Galway University Hospital, indeed in Galway hospitals in general, have been revealed following the introduction of a triage GP in A&E. I'm looking at the figures here, to be quite honest, and when you look at what happened, if I go back to, say, just take University Hospital Galway, Galway University Hospitals, which would include Galway. So in 2021, the figure was 12,810. Then it went to 11,400. And it's at 18,514 in attendances in 2023. I want to go to the chair of the Health Forum, indeed, Councillor Donnie Kilday, who joins me on the line. Councillor Kilday, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
I'm looking at some of these attendances between GUH and I'm looking at Port Yonkla. I mean, the figures are quite staggering.
They are, Keith. And look, before we get into this, could I just take the opportunity, Keith, to wish you well when you're stepping back from your role. And on behalf of on behalf of the people at Tuam, to thank you most sincerely for the, I suppose, consistency that you have given news in Tuam and the wider area. I know on my own behalf, my first ever interview with you, I remember as well, was in 1999 when I became president of Tuam Chamber of Commerce. And you've always been good to organisations like that that are replicated right throughout the county and no more than the Tuam area. So I thank you, Keith, and I wish you well on the next journey.
Was I nice to you? I always ask people, was I nice to you? Because sometimes I can go off on a rant altogether. But anyway, listen, thank you for those kind words. Coming back to the figures, though, that I'm looking at here today, 75,596 people attended. 18,514 were admitted and to the hospital, indeed. These figures are staggering.
Staggering, to give the level of work that the actual hospital do and that the staff there do. So, I mean, I know we had COVID in 2020 and the numbers of attending the A&E, not the hospital, just the A&E, were at 61,000. And then we saw 2021 with the lifting of COVID rise to 68,500. And then 2022 to 75,000, and that was replicated again in 2023. And that's people attending A&E. And then we look at the admissions. So I would say if we take 2023 as a staggered number, of the 75,500 people that arrived at the door of A&E, 18,500 of them were admitted. And it's a huge number, and it's a huge volume. And I suppose I was looking particularly at Galway University Hospital and Port Yonkla University Hospital as well, you know, and their figures are, they have 30,000 people attending the A&E there, and 9,000 of those were admitted, as in got beds within the organisation or the relative hospital. But I think what was most important that came out of this, and I want to say this in probably the most sensitive way possible, because I know people don't rock up to A&E when they're not sick, because people would only go to A&E when they're sick or A&E when they're sick. But it's estimated that 18% of the attendance of the people that attend A&Es could actually be treated within the community or within their GP services. And I think when you put that into perspective, Keith, that comes in at, at 50, like would say, if you were 2023, yeah, 75,000 people were attended, that meant that 57,500 people were treated there and then and were never admitted.
So why are they, 10,000
of those,
to use your analogy, why are they rocking up then to ED department? Why are they not going to the doctor? Is it because they don't get caught for the fee of a doctor, or they don't have the money to pay for the doctor? Why are they going into such a crowded area that really is an emergency department?
Well, like I said, take that figure of 2023 in Galway alone, 10,000, just over 10,000 people that attended A&E could have attended a GP service elsewhere. Now, there's always going to be a number of people who maybe cannot get into a GP, but I think because a large portion of those would have been medical card holders, it was the information would have been given. And I think that some people, not through any fault or maybe through lack of education in that the services that are available to them within the community, tend to use A&E as a GP service. And I know that when they put a triage in there in the A&E services, in particular in the GUH A&E, if you look at the people, the only people that have not been admitted after attending, that's, I suppose, a strong indication of the work that's been done in there to try and get people out of the service. And unfortunately, when you have numbers like that, and we see in recent press, you know, mistakes being, I suppose, made with certain diagnoses. I think why I'm with you today, Keith, is to raise awareness to people is that, look, of course, if you're sick, go to A&E. But if you feel that it can be treated by a GP, I implore people to go to their GP, because every single person that goes in there that can be treated by a GP or their own GP or a community service, you know, they're taking 10,000 attendances less a year, and then giving, I suppose, the service more of an acute service and emergency A&E. I think that's because as you know and I know, that people don't just rock up and present themselves because they're sneezing or they're flu or cold.
But they shouldn't.
You know, that they are genuinely sick. I mean, that's honest.
Okay, but if you take 2023 then, Donnchadhy, and you take 75,596, divide that by 365 days in the year, it never shuts down, never slows down. You're looking at a minimum of 207 people presenting every day. Is there any other service in the country outside of medical that 207 people would go in on a daily basis seeking assistance?
Yeah, and look at, and 20, you have to remember that 27 of those people could actually be treated in a GP service, and I think that's the message. But no, you're right, it's a staggering number of people and staff to have available to do that. Mainly between Thursday and Sunday are the higher numbers, I have to say. I think what you're given there is an average, which is fair enough, I suppose, for the purposes of what we're doing here in the wintertime. Service plan as well probably has a greater number. You probably see over 350 to 400 per day and in the real peak of winter, Keith. And look, I think with the implementation now of mobile X-ray units, and X-ray units is rolling out in June next week, and other services, I think it's just to let people know and educate them that there are other places to go other than our acute hospital, the A&E in Galway. And I think it's important, that message to get across. But it's a huge burden on staff in there to deal with, I suppose, you know, having to leave people wait, because they're, when you're triaged, it's the person that's the most sickest gets treated first. And I think to have people in there waiting long lengths of time to be seen because they wouldn't be seen as a priority, it just makes life more difficult for the patient, which is the most important thing, and indeed for the nurses and staff that work within the A&E system itself.
But then we hear us say, you know, 32 people on trolleys to get in. With those type of figures, 32... I mean, we're lucky it's at 32 or 36,000, but each and every one of those are an individual person. They're a patient. And we know that there's been problems in University of Limerick and all that went with it. The man was found on the ground. But I mean, it's the turnover, the ratio is huge here.
It is. And look at, Limerick needs to learn a major lesson. I think Galway are starting to get it right to some degree. And I think if you just imagine that the Limerick A&E is less than half the size of Galway, I think that just gives you an indication, and they're probably the same numbers, to be honest. Mm-hmm. We also have people presenting in the A&E and GUH from Ennis, because obviously with Limerick under such pressure, people feel that they can get into Ennis or Portiuncla first. And that's why the Portiuncla numbers have gone up, to be honest, with you, Keith. I mean, we see like it's gone from 5,000 to 9,000 from 2020 to 2023. That's admissions. And otherwise, it's gone from 20,000 to over 30,000 in 2023. So there's a good rise in Portiuncla for that reason. And we don't want to see Portiuncla going down the same route as GUH or Limerick, where they're under too much pressure, difficult to get staff, difficult to get consultants, triage GPs, etc. And I think that the warning really is, you know, if you're sick, obviously go to A&E, and we would never discourage someone from doing that. But certainly think twice about it, because we have the Roscommon unit there, the minor injury clinic in Roscommon Hospital. We have the, as I said, Portiuncla, and we have GUH. But just to be careful, and I suppose get advice from a GP before you go in is probably always the safest. Or ring Westock, that's out of hours, and you'll always get good advice from the professionals, in fairness, and not from the likes of certainly you or I, Keith, to be honest.
No. Keith, the medical centres are packed with lots of medical card holders and all the children getting free GP care. So the A&E is where people have to go. Waiting for medical centres is far too long. Another caller said to us, Jane, well, you seem to have struck a nerve, I have to say, today. A lack of GP service in Ireland, especially rural Ireland. GP only opens 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and very hard to get an appointment. A&E, highly inefficient. Westock, always busy. And another failure of the current government, this caller said. And a caller said, Keith, I was in the ED last week and it was like a war zone. People sitting on the floor, all chairs full. A lot of the patients had 3 to 4 people with them. When security tried to stop onlookers coming in, they received horrendous abuse from them. And another caller said, Keith, 3 weeks to see a doctor. So what do you do? You have to go to ED. And Keith, can you ask your man on the radio, that's you, Councillor Killalay, what about the moratorium in the hospitals? That's not helping matters either.
Keith, when it's coming to acute care, I think Tony Canavan and indeed the management of the hospital there, when it comes to acute care, that the moratorium doesn't stay in place for those that are involved in accident and emergency. There are a number of positions open, I believe, and they're in possible fields. The moratorium is not right across the board. Unfortunately it's selective. I don't agree with the moratorium, to be honest, but I think when it comes to emergency care in the likes of Galway, Limerick, Port Junctla, and indeed Roscommon, that there are positions that are to be filled there constantly.
But I mean, to be honest, if I was Chris Kane, if I was Tony Canavan, if I was Anne Cosgrove going home at night time, I don't know, could I sleep at night time because of the pressure that they must be under? When you're looking at those figures of 75,596, and like a broken bloody record at this stage, but when you see those figures, like, it's a calamity of calamities. And there's been no, the infrastructure's been there, the extra bed blocks have been made. But I mean, if the ED department, the new ED department, not the temporary one, there's been no planning permission put in for that just yet, or the mother and baby, or the maternity unit, and the paediatric unit. I mean, we're lagging behind here in healthcare for the guts of 40 years, so we are.
I'm not going to disagree with you, we are, yes. And look at, I think the figures of the admittance of 2023 of almost 20,000 to be admitted from that 75 or 76,000. Well, I would hope though people you mentioned do sleep at night, because they're in charge of a system of people that when you are really sick and you get into hospital, you are treated. But unfortunately, there are waiting times. I think it's important to acknowledge the work to do, because they do great work behind the scenes, and I think you know it, Keith, and I know it. But sometimes when you're part of the system and you're waiting for a bed and you're, you know, waiting to be seen in A&E for one different reason or another, you know, I think we have to look at ourselves in how we manage the health system. We do need infrastructure. On that note, I hope for God's sake today that Galway we'll get a senior ministry, because it's something that we haven't had since Eamon O'Queeve and Frank Fahey, and indeed our president, Michael D. Higgins. I think we need someone senior to be able to push on the agenda of our new elective hospital, our new A&E, our new children's section and maternity section. We need a senior minister in Galway to be able to drive on that. I think it's very important, and I wish Hildegard well today. I hope, for God's sake, for our own sake in Galway, and I know we're not the same in politics, but I think anyone could acknowledge the fact that Galway needs a senior minister, and needs one badly, to hit issues like this hard and to escalate them to a certain degree, that we're not waiting years and years and years for a new elective hospital, new A&E, new services, moratoriums, and that we can get rid of a lot of the of what call the roadblocks that are in the way of progressing the health services.
I just want to make two other comments to you, but I want to clarify. I wasn't being personal when I said Tony Canavan, Chris Kane, and because I know them extremely well, and they're lovely people, and they're good people. But like we talk about work-related stress, they have to be living with work-related stress because of the pressures on them. But I mean, why is it in the likes of Drogheda and other hospitals, and Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital in Drogheda didn't have a great name, but I know somebody that went into it recently and was seen within a couple of minutes, was treated, and is getting the utmost of care. Now, maybe the population is less, but why is it that it works in some and it doesn't work in others?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's how sick you are. And I know of someone that was brought in urgently into A&E 2 weeks ago. They were seen within 15 minutes and were in a bed within a half an hour. Okay, I think everything is scaled on what you're presented with and the ailment you're presented with. Okay. And I think the less your ailment is, I think the more unfair you think you're being treated, which I agree with, because I suppose everybody should be seen in a timely manner. But when you have a hospital that's lacking in infrastructure, when you have a hospital that's difficult to hire staff in, let's be honest, because of A, the working environment, and because of, I suppose, B, the shortage of nursing staff, and consultant doctors in place, because I think from talking to someone there a few weeks ago, I know that there are, and thanks be to God, there are visiting consultants going over on a temporary basis to help out ED to get the pressures off, and they're coming from the private sector.
Okay.
And I suppose to acknowledge and thank them for that, because it's important that they're able to count on those physicians, consulting physicians that can pop over to the hospital and do a couple of shifts.
Okay.
To try and clear the backlog. And I think that's, it just, there needs to be a concentrated effort on how we do it. And there needs to be a concentrated effort on the patients that present as well. And I have to say that, as well as the people in the hospital saying, look at, you know, can we come up with a strategy where that someone is seen within 12 hours or someone gets a bed within 12 hours and someone is seen within four, and is supposed to churn the number around, but it only happens with staff.
Okay. All right. Quickly, some of the questions. Keith, my daughter works in there. It's mental. Such a lack of staff, this caller said. All breaks and sprains, this caller said. They're coming in hot and heavy. All breaks and strains and sprains should go to Merlin Park. That would free up so many places. We need a new hospital, Keith, this caller said, built in Merlin Park. Why are we wasting money adding to UHG? And another caller said, Keith, in Loughrea, good morning to you, Keith. In Loughrea, it's up to 7 to 10 days to see a GP. When you have a sick kid or an older person, we've no choice but to visit A&E. The town is overpopulated, and now the developers want to build extra houses. This is all well and good, building these houses, but we'll have even more pressure on our GP and clog it up even more, this caller said. And they just keep coming in, so they do. Keith, how crazy is it that GP's practices with 6 to 7 doctors only open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. 5 days a week? Why can those doctors' hours not be staggered to stay open 24/7 and consequently relieve the pressure on A&E? There are several of those multidisciplinary practices in Galway City alone. So there you go. Donna, I'm going to have to leave it for today, but thank you indeed for joining us today. Councillor Donna Killalay joining us on the line. Your thoughts and comments. Are you still with me, Donna? Just, did you say to me earlier on, there's an X-ray in Tuam is opening next week?
Yeah, the X-ray in Tuam is due to open next week.
Hallelujah. Yeah. There must have been a miracle somewhere, because how many years are we waiting for that now?
Five.
More? Six, seven?
No. Eight.
Give me nine. I'll take nine.
So by the way, Keith, just to ensure, like as well as the X-ray unit opening up in Tuam, we also have the mobile X-ray units that's great. Yeah,
but the X-ray in Tuam will be operational next week.
That's what I'm led to believe. Yeah, I was told that 3 weeks ago that next week was the date. Yeah.
All right, Councillor Donna Killalay, there must have been a blue moon last night. I know that there was an eclipse, but there must have been a blue moon as well, because if that goes ahead next week, that will be tremendous news, I have to say, for the people of East Galway.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Now, very good morning to you. Welcome on into today's programme. Let me go to the telephone line now at this stage, and I want to go to Garda Kevin Farley, who joins me on the line, because Galway Garda, you're seeking your assistance today, Tuesday the 9th of April, on a number of issues, and we're just trying to get him up on the system, and he's there for us right now. Garda Kevin Farley, good morning to you. How are you today? Good. Kevin, we're looking at a burglary in the Temperance Hall and a good bit of damage done to it there over the bank holiday weekend.
That's right, Keith. Yes, Gardaí and Loughrea are looking for the public's assistance in relation to a burglary which caused extensive damage to the Temperance Hall, Barrack Street, Loughrea. This incident occurred on the 1st of April, a bank holiday Monday, between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Entry was gained to the premises by the suspects, and a substantial amount of damage was caused inside of the building, which is a building used by the Loughrea community. Gardaí and Loughrea are anxious to speak to anyone who may have observed any suspicious activity in the area around this time, or indeed anyone who has any information in relation to this incident, are asked to contact Loughrea Garda Station on 01842 870, or the Garda Confidential Line on 1800 666 111.
Now we're going to the city, and we're going to Funishke in Johishke indeed, and some criminal damage there that the Garda and Oran Moore and yourself, you're looking into.
That's right, Keith. Garda and Oran Moore investigating a criminal damage incident that occurred in Funishke Estate, Johishke, between 9 p.m. on the 5th of April of Friday and 10 a.m. on the 6th of April of Saturday, where the owner of a white BMW discovered that red paint had been thrown over the car, causing extensive damage. Garda and Oran Moore are looking to speak to anyone who may have been in the area and observed any suspicious activity, or has any information in relation to this incident, or ask to contact Oran Moore Garda Station on 091-388-030, or the Garda Confidential Line at 1800-666-111.
I've got Farley, we're also looking there at criminal damage, not too far away from that, in Bohor Waithman indeed, and you're investigating that also.
That's right. Gardaí and Galway investigating a criminal damage incident that occurred on the Boho Wayman estate on the 5th of April, a Friday evening at 10:55 p.m. where the owner of the house heard a loud bang and discovered a front window had been smashed. Gardaí and Galway looking to speak to anyone who have been in the area around this time or has any information in relation to this incident or has to contact Galway Garda Station on online 1-53-1000 or the Garda Confidential Line 18-1-666-1.
Now you're going to Tuam, so you're off the next criminal damage. Garda Farley, you have it there.
That's right. Guardian Tumor investigating a criminal damage incident occurred at the Tier and Kyre Estate Wednesday, the 3rd of April, between 2 a.m. and 12 p.m, where the owner of the Vauxhall Insignia discovered tyres of the car were damaged. Guardian Tumor are looking to speak to anyone who may have any information in relation to this incident or to contact Tuam Garda Station on 093-708-40 or indeed the Garda Confidential Line 1800-666-1.
All right. Now, let's stay indeed with... again, we're looking at a massive amount of money. $25,360,000 was reported stolen in 2023. This was a report, but you've got details on this.
That's right, Keith. A total of over $25 million was stolen in 2023 in relation to investment fraud.
Not just in Galway.
That's right, nationally. In the first 2 months of 2024, over 55 people have reported investment fraud, and in the past 4 years, almost $60 million. Has been stolen from victims of investment fraud in Ireland. And Garda Síochána is advising the public to pay particular close attention when considering any potential investments, given the significant rise in investment fraud. By the end of 2023, over $25 million had been stolen from victims of investment fraud. That is equal to double the amount of stolen from victims in 2021 and 2022. Investment fraud is where criminals pose as investment managers to fool someone into investing money into schemes and projects that do not exist. During a period of high cost of living, these sophisticated criminals are taking advantage by cloning web pages and targeting victims through online and social media adverts, by promising once-in-a-lifetime opportunities to instantly invest with fast and large financial returns. Over double the number of victims have been reported in Garda Síochána in the first 2 months of this year compared to January and February of last year. One of the reported incidents in January 2024, a man in his 70s based in the east of Ireland reported that he had over 190,000 stolen after he had invested in the money in what he thought was a legitimate British company. Now, these are how to avoid investment fraud. Do not invest until you get a reliable financial and legal advice. Check the regulatory status of the company via the Central Bank of Ireland webpage. Do not respond to pop-up social media ads or messages with claims about investment returns. Ignore unsolicited approaches or cold calls about investments. Beware of celebrity-endorsed investments. They not even know their name has been used. Be careful of cryptocurrency, bank bonds and hedge funds, investment opportunities that present unusually high returns. Be wary of fake wallets for storing cryptocurrency. These can be scams for malware to infect your or control your computer. Do not click on links for web pages that you don't know, and always check that the site is HTTPS secured. Never allow anyone remote access to your computer or download apps that can give others control of your computer. AnyDesk is one example. Take your time to consider before sending or transferring any money. Get a second opinion from a friend, a family member, colleague, or if not a financial advisor. Never disclose personal data or bank account passwords or codes. Detective Superintendent Michael Crane of the Garda National Economic Crime Bureau said, people are always going to be attracted to the promise of big profits. That is why these sophisticated fraudulent investments are on the rise. Those affected by this type of crime are ordinary people who unfortunately can lose their life savings, nest eggs, or retirement lump sum.
God love them. God love them. Garda, Kevin Farley, thank you for joining us today on the programme. And if you can assist any member of Garda Síochána, would you please be good enough to call them? Any one of them, if you know them at all. And if you know anything about that temperance hall in Loughrea, thuggish behaviour in the area. And again, that's criminal damage in Tuishkin and onwards from there. Please contact any member of Garda Síochána or give them a ring in Galway City on 0915-38000. I have two guests sitting opposite me today, eager guests of Tony O'Gregan from Round Newcastle GA and Maura Breedney-Kinneil indeed from Galway Autism Partnership. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, hi there, how are you?
God, you'd make a great band altogether. You're singing in harmony today. Don the Galway Colours for the Maroon and White Swim Splash. Tony, did you put this together?
I know we had a committee formed last year, Keith. This is our second year, and I suppose Louise Griffin came up with the initiative and idea at the start, and thankfully we've got a lot of volunteers.
Louise comes up with loads of ideas.
Yeah, and this is probably one of her better ones and her best one, and we're very pleased to have her in the club, and she's been a great inspiration in getting it up and running. And I suppose we were all nervous last year and tentative last year in terms of how to go, but just to see, you know, the magic of the whole day down there last year, I'd say we had a couple of thousand people, and just the noise and the music from Drumador and DJ Flaco, and just the whole experience was, you know, breathtaking.
So when is it taking place then? Next Sunday, the 14th of April?
Yeah, we're on Ladies Beach again, a bit earlier because of the tide times, but I'm sure people will appreciate and get down early for the music, which will be starting about 9:30 with Drumador.
AM or PM?
AM, of course, yeah, Keith. And we're very lucky to have lovely breakfast supplies from Ground & Co, hot coffees and breakfast rolls and sausage rolls, so we'll all be nice and warm after the cold Atlantic water.
And Maura Breach, you're trying to raise money for GAP, so you're a Galway Autism Partnership, and again, it's always a struggle indeed for the work that you do, but how can they donate to this, and how can they make money for you on this?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a small organisation, as you know, Keith, and we depend a lot, I suppose, on the generosity and the organisation of initiatives such as the Maroon and White Swim. If anybody wants to take part on the day, we'd love to have people down on the beach, obviously, and that you can register through the Rahu Newcastle website. Also, donations are very welcome through the iDonate as well. So for anybody that can't make it there on the day, please donate.
How much would you like to raise on the day with the two of you? Don't be looking at Tony now, looking at you, Sam.
I think like money is one side of it, Keith, but I think, you know, part for me last year was, you know, waiting down there maybe 2 hours before the event and seeing a young guy coming over to me with his mother and communicating me through a dictaphone around how pleased he was to be part of the event and what time was the food truck coming and what time was the music coming. And, you know, just to see young people with additional needs, you know, not been differentiated or segregated from these events, you know, I think is the most important thing. And, you know, we'd love to raise a lot of money for, you know, two very worthy causes as well, obviously.
What is the other? So GAP is one. Who are the other?
Round Newcastle as well.
So you're splitting the funds then?
Yeah, we've you know, a programme in our club called the All Stars programme, which we run on Friday nights, and we would hope to include in our summer camp this year, where there's a particular emphasis on, you know, including families with additional needs and kids on the summer camps as well, and, you know, making a safe space and a caring environment for the Gmupta. So, you know, it requires equipment and extra resources in terms of coaches and stuff. So, you know, it's a really, really important cause for us as well.
And Maura Breach, are you getting much funding currently? Are you getting any public funding?
We're getting some public funding, Keith. Obviously, our applications have to be submitted annually, and it's not near as much as we need to cover the costs.
Yet what you're doing, the impact that you're having on families' lives is just huge.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're, as I said, we're a very small organisation. I suppose the two main pillars of support that we offer our families are the camps and clubs that we run for the children, for teens, for adults coming together on Friday nights and outings and so on, but also the therapeutic supports that we offer to individuals. We have an all-play therapist working with us at GAP, and she works with families, she works with individuals, she works with children, and she's one of three people in the country with her qualification. So we're in a very, very privileged position to be able to have that in place for the families at GAP. But obviously everything that we run and everything we do costs money. So being involved in an initiative like this to raise some much needed and extra funds is very, very important for us.
All right. So if they want to get further details, they can do so. If they want to get details, they can do so by going along on Sunday morning then. Do you want them there around 9:30?
Half nine would be lovely, yeah.
If they went at 9, they could help you set up, Tony Oaks, so they could.
Or even 8:30, Keith, yeah. We'll take loads of hands on board.
So 8:30 for the workers.
8:30 for the team, yeah.
To get set up. How many did you have last year?
We had 300 registered, and I'd say about 2,000 people turned up on the day as well, in terms of overlooking all the music and the activity from Ladies Beach there. It was just a phenomenal experience.
And how many have you registered around?
We're up around 150 already, and I would say 80 or 90% of the registrations come in on the Friday and Saturday before, because everyone kind of checks the weather. So last year we had an amazing day of about 20 degrees, so we're hoping for much the same again.
But if you're going for a swim, the weather doesn't really make a difference, does it?
Not at all, no. I think it's the experience of everyone down there and the energy it brings, and, you know, being out in the outdoors doing something for the community, you know, of service, I think it's the most brilliant thing we can do in our lives, and, you know, I can't wait for the event, really. I think it's going to be brilliant for everyone involved.
All right, so if they want to get further details, if they go to the your website then?
Our website, yeah, the links are all there in terms of registration, I donate and buying the maroon and white hoodie, etc. So,
Rothen Newcastle, just go to that website and get further details from there. Good luck with the Moran Preach, Nick and Yela. I hope you raise loads of money and I hope that you keep doing the work you're doing, but you need money to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much for joining us today, guys. Now, let me go to Aveen Bannon, who joins me on the line, because we're looking at menopause and are you eating right for midlife? And she joins me on the line. Aveen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today. What do you mean, are you eating right for midlife?
Well, I suppose there's two aspects for when you look at nutrition in terms of that point in a female's life. You're looking at kind of current kind of symptoms that they may be experiencing that might change, and then you're looking at future-proofing your future health. So there are certain changes that happen hormonally, they're going to happen to every woman out there. Mm-hmm. And there can be immediate symptoms that come with it, but there's also then health implications for as you go forward. And there's just some little changes we just need to be kind of mindful of, I suppose, as we enter into that phase.
When we talk about the phase in question, I mean, are you talking about a well-balanced diet? Are you talking about looking at what you're putting into your body? Are you talking about meat? Are you talking about dairy products? Are you talking about fish and fish oils?
Yeah, so what you're talking about, when we look at the future-proofing kind of aspect, we're really focusing on probably bone health and heart health. They're kind of two particularly important ones. So during the kind of change in hormonal phase, like a woman can lose up to 20% of her bone mass in the kind of years kind of coming up to menopause and then up to 5 years afterwards. So our calcium requirements will really increase at that period in time. And it's one of those ones that kind of, I think people think of calcium, you know, when we're younger and our bones and kind of keeping us healthy then. But really what we're trying to do is make sure we keep our bones healthy going forward to reduce the risk of things like osteoporosis or kind of any problems along those lines. And then heart health is something that, you know, estrogen is a hormone that kind of has cardioprotective kind of properties. So mm-hmm. when our estrogen starts to kind of lower down, our risk of heart disease can increase slightly or become more similar to that of a man. So we want to make sure we're looking kind of at that aspect, which is really looking at fiber, as you say, fruit and vegetables, healthy fats, omega-3, and kind of looking at balance. But I suppose the one thing we have to think about is as we get older, sometimes we need a little bit less calories. So we need to make sure we're kind of making our choices count. I suppose that's kind of one way of thinking about it, yeah.
And you don't have to spend an absolute fortune on it. I mean, I would love a tuna salad or a tinned fish, be it tinned salmon or otherwise. But you say that that's good for people and that they should be looking at it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we don't have to throw loads of supplements. I mean, the one thing we take is vitamin D. That's kind of, you know, like kind of across the board for everybody. But when it comes to healthy eating, it isn't overly expensive. It doesn't have to involve lots of different supplements. It looks at our day-to-day intake. So if you think about even calcium-rich foods like our milk, yogurt, cheese, these are all very much everyday foods that can be enjoyed as part of your healthy eating plan. Mm-hmm. You look at protein-rich foods, you know, you can get protein as well from things like beans and pulses and lentils, as well as your meat and your fish and tofu and other kind of foods as well. So it's really about getting a lot of variety. We like to kind of encourage people to get about 30 different plant-based foods per week in their diet. So that would be a plant-based food would include your fruit, vegetables, beans, pulses, lentils, things like that, that you can add into stews, add into casseroles, add into soups, and really help kind of bring up our fiber intake, but also our protein. So it's really looking at ways of kind of maybe tweaking a little bit of what you're doing to kind of make it that little bit healthier. And then making sure we're getting calcium kind of regularly throughout our day. And then also making sure that we're getting plenty of a little bit of protein at each meal. Because I suppose one thing as well, we talk about, like I will talk about things like heart health and bone health, but for the women going through menopause, often the concerns for them might be the symptoms they're experiencing. Mm. So they might feel like I'm getting hot flushes, or I feel like I'm putting on weight, or, you know, I'm not sleeping as well, I'm tired. And there was a survey that was done by a lady called Dr. Patricia Heavey, she looked at 850 women and found that 80% of them reported like weight changes during the menopause transition. So, you know, that can be hard as well. And then people start trying to diet, but then they're taking out some of the healthy food. So you really have to look at the balance and kind of incorporate that you're not kind of being too hard on yourself either.
Now, the National Menopause Summit is taking place in the Aviva Stadium in Dublin on Thursday and Friday of this week, coming indeed.
Yeah.
And the National Dairy Council has produced a booklet on diet and menopause, and they'll be exhibiting at the event as well. So are you asking...
The booklet is fantastic. Like, the booklet really has good information in it and kind of like tips and kind of practical advice. So I'd recommend anyone going to try and pick up one of them, because it is actually a really good booklet. And it kind of has the kind of key things to look at to kind of help get that balance in your diet.
Yeah. But I mean, the situation quite simply as we speak is, my apology about the sound in the background. I don't know what the sound is in the background, but it ain't coming from your system, so it's not.
No.
But I mean, the situation is that, again, it's on Thursday and Friday in the Aviva Stadium, but if they want to get further details on it, they can do so by just going to nationalmenopausesummit.com and getting details from there. And again, do you know what? It could be the best conference that they might go to in life.
It might be. And you know what? And if you're not able to make it to the conference for whatever reason, you can actually download the booklet from the on the kind of diet and menopause from the NDC, from the National Dairy Council website. It's on their website too. So, you know, just in case if you're not able to, that facility is there. But if you're able to go, it's a fantastic conference to get to. So,
okay.
It's something that, if people are talking about, which is great.
All right, listen, well done to you. So if they want to get further details, Aveen Bannon, you can just go to the NDC website, get further details from there. Or indeed, just Google the National Menopause Summit taking place in the Aviva Stadium and get further details from there. Thank you so much for joining us today. Aveen Bannon, don't know where that noise came from, guys, so I do apologise for that there. Just got a text in, Kate, two dogs running loose by Kevin Burke Tires in Athen Rye. They will be the cause of a major accident if they're not tied and taken in. Can you please get somebody to look at that? What's going on beside Kevin Burke Tires? It's fabulous work. I was on the motorway a few times this week and last weekend as well. But there's a powerful amount of work going on just in and around there. Somebody tell me what's going on. If somebody's always missing some dogs, they're going to be, will cause an accident if they're not tied up. They're on the motorway there and close to Kevin Burke Tires. So please, if anybody knows who owns them, would you be good enough, please, just to take them in. Keith, if doctors charge less for their services, people would willingly go there. My husband was charged €80 each for injections in his shoulder, and on top of that, €40 each to administer them by his GP, despite the fact that he has a medical card. He can get all that done in the hospital for free, so why wouldn't he go to the hospital for them? The government needs to tackle the GPs as a priority, this caller said. Now let's head towards the 11 o'clock news. We have loads to come, including music in the next hour. Stay tuned for that and more to come between now and the end of today's programme. Let's head towards the news desk for news and death notices. Talk to you soon.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.